Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Tina Packer is one of the world's leading authorities on Shakespeare's work and the founding artistic director of Shakespeare & Company in Lenox, Massachusetts. She'll be delivering the 19th annual Burian Lecture and discuss her new book, Women of Will, Following the Feminine in Shakespeare's Plays, a exploration of the bard's female characters, on Monday the 13th at 8 o'clock in the Studio Theater of the Performing Arts Center at SUNY Albany's Uptown campus. It is a great pleasure to welcome Tina Packer to the Roundtable. We always love having you here.
Thank you, Joe. I was loving being here.
Well, it's a delight. So let us talk about the lecture, which comes out of the book, which comes out of a performance. So you'll be talking about the Women of Will. And this, is it safe to say, is sort of a culmination of study?
It's a culmination of study. It's also a culmination of performance, both as an actor performing, but also as a director directing other actors. So you could say there's a lot of other actors' work in here as well, because a lot of my insight came out of what other actors did. And I hope what I'll have the opportunity to do is actually obviously do the lecture, but intersperse it with little bits of pieces of Shakespeare text so that I can say, you see how I was in this kind of emotional state here doing this, this, and this. That's actually what I got from it. Doing the four-month run in New York was extraordinary because by repeating it seven times a week, I actually found my brainwave going into certain places, and I got a lot of insights through never having to think about what the next thing was I was going to say, and always being able to be conscious of me, the actor, as well as me, Lady Macbeth.
And in that, it would seem that you would want to think about that there would come a depth of saying, oh, all right, I wonder why that happened, or what's the context for that, which obviously you can't think of in that moment.
That's exactly it. But by doing it night after night, you do get that, or you get it when immediately you step off stage afterwards. And so it would be things like, I actually would be in a place where I could see from the consonants that I was saying how it was firing in my brain and how it was altering my own state of consciousness. Does that make sense to you?
It seems very heavy, but yes.
It's not heavy.
No.
Suddenly you can feel your mind expanding. And of course, the vowel signs always hold the emotional content of what you're saying anyway. And you, as an actor, you're used to the vowel signs holding the emotional content. But it's the first time I've had an experience of the cerebral interaction between the emotion and the physical, I don't know what you were, it's like things going off in your head all the time, so that it's sparking your brain. Actually, you can feel your brain working. I'm used to feeling my bowels and my gut and my heart. And I'm used to feeling those working. It's the first time I've ever heard my actual synapses at work.
When you are into something like that.
Yes.
And this is probably a poor analogy, but, you know, for those of us who perhaps have Southern roots, or for me as living in Philadelphia, I don't have a Philadelphia accent, but you go to Philadelphia and then all of a sudden you grab it. I assume you have the same thing when you go back to England and come back here. So you start to think about it. So when you are in this world of Shakespeare, do you feel like you start to think like Shakespeare?
Yes, but I also feel this thing about your roots, for instance. When I was doing Rosalind and I was playing the boy Ganymede, so Rosalind dresses up as Ganymede, I started, for some reason, my Nottingham accent started coming out, which is where I grew up, in the middle of England. And And so this saucy lackey, as he's thought, had a Nottingham accent. But what happened to me was, so he came of his own accord, this saucy lackey, but it was me. And it was me at a much younger age being from Nottingham and you know, really being me in your face. You know, you want to cause trouble, yeah, I'll marry. But there's something about the vowel sounds and the consonants and the rhythms of the speech that is a consciousness. And so if you go to Harvard, everybody speaks in very measured tones, and they're really, you're thinking carefully as you're speaking, and everybody's kind of weighing, and you're not gonna splat around the place there. So what you start seeing is how much the way you speak actually influences your consciousness, the way in which you manifest information and the way in which you absorb information.
The book is fascinating because it shows an evolution,
right,
an evolution of Shakespeare's writing and thinking and acting.
Yes, yes, yes. You have to remember that he was an actor until he left the playhouse. And one of the things about the women characters was that he wouldn't necessarily have known which boys were going to play the women. And so, because the boys only stayed for a year or 2 years, three absolutely max, but he might not know who was going to play the women. Whereas he always knew who was going to play Lear or Hamlet. It was Burbage, you know. So he and Burbage were alongside each other for 30 odd years, you know, creating this stuff. So he would always be thinking about how Burbage would say this. There's Burbage's consciousness in there as well. But for the women, there never was. So there weren't people that he would actually be resonating in his voice, only his imagination. So in some ways, I think the women are purer expressions of who he is, rather than, you know, knowing that Hemings is going to be playing that part, Condell's going to be playing that part,
right,
you know, because it was the same actors for 20 years, 30 years, and Burbage being such a huge presence and playing all the leads. That's very different from not knowing who the woman that was going to be Cleopatra or Lady Macbeth or something. So he's just inventing them and hoping that the boy actor can get there, or at least can say the lines clearly so everybody hears them.
What do we lose in reinterpretation? Because so many of us who see Shakespeare now, we'll see an interpretation.
Yes.
And the words are changed,
yeah,
often.
Yes.
And as is the meaning.
Yes.
So you don't get the idea. You perhaps what you are talking about in here from the text is often lost.
Right.
Because in some cases I think they're trying to correct it, perhaps.
Yes, yes. Because we've got shallower thinking than they have. You know, I mean that seriously. We're not such deep thinkers as they were. They were living on a huge paradigm shift going on at that moment. And there's a paradigm shift going on now where there's one set of circumstances about how the world thought and acted is changing radically. And, you know, it comes obviously because of the printing press. It comes because the world is not flat. It's round. You know, we suddenly think, is God up there or in hell down there? Well, no, it can't, because we know what's down there now. Do you know what I mean? Everything is shifting. So we're in the middle of a paradigm shift, but they're really trying to figure it out. Whereas we, much more, I don't mean the scientists, but we, the populace, the general populace, are just riding with it. You know, we're just going with it. Our bodies are just being taken over by the internet. Our brainwaves are just being taken over by, you know, what's on our iPhones and all that kind of stuff. And we don't rebel against it and say, no, I'm not going to do this. It just happens to us. What happened to Shakespeare was, I think, that he, because he was a playwright and he was really trying to figure out political structures, social structures, the position of women in the world, should we have a monarchy or should we have a republic? You know, huge idea, the idea you wouldn't have a monarch, you might have a republic instead. Because he was figuring those things out, he was speaking deeply and passionately about it. He wasn't pussyfooting around the issues. He was really going into it. So the language itself actually expresses what he's saying. And the actor has to take that on. Now, you've got to really know what to be or not to be. That is the question. You've really got to take it on about what it means. You can't just say it lightly and hope that nobody will ask you what it means. So you're actually forcing yourself to deeper levels of understanding. Now, what happens today is that a lot of directors don't really understand the play. So they think, oh, this play is about, let's take Richard III, which is the one that gets reinterpreted. You know, we're going to set it in, I know, Afghanistan. We're going to set it. So where you set it becomes a big thing because there's a couple of parallels between what's happening there and what's happening here. But then the dialogue doesn't really fit in with the concept. So then they start changing the language. Whereas the whole depth of Shakespeare is not changing the language, it's really going into the language and understanding what it means and really, in the depth of that understanding, looking at the world. So if you can really deeply think about that, then you start seeing the world on a whole other level. And if the actors can be articulate about it and take it on, then you have a shift in consciousness rather than an entertainment, which is what happens now.
Because with that said, there are many different levels.
Yes.
In the sense that I can go to a play, I can go see Shakespeare at Shakespeare and Company and come away with what I come away with.
Right.
But here you are doing this for 40 plus years of working with Shakespeare, and you're still working on what to be or not to be means.
That's right. That's right. And the important thing is to be working on it, Joe. The
yes.
important thing is to be asking the question. Once you know the answer, that's the end of the game, because then you...
that's no fun.
Well, it is no fun, you know, because in any case, it's already changed. It's already shifted. You know, I mean, if we just say to be or not to be, that's the question. In this moment of time, with all our kids on their iPhones, you know, are they ever actually alive now to what's happening to them in that moment as they're looking at their iPhones? Do they know what's going on in their bodies? Do they know what's going on in their relationships? Do they know what's going on inside them? You know, are they actually in a to-be state, or are they just hooked up to this thing? I mean, so if you have to keep on asking the question again. And I don't know the answer, but what I do know is that he asks the best questions. You know, Tolstoy doesn't do bad either.
Well, this is why this is why you should be going to college campuses and talking to the youth of America. You're going to be delivering the 19th annual Burian lecture and discuss your new book, Women of Will: Following the Feminine in Shakespeare's Plays, on Monday the 13th at 8 o'clock in the Studio Theater of the Performing Arts Center on the University at Albany Uptown campus. You can go to albany.edu for more information. Albany.edu for more information. Also, earlier on that day, on Monday the 13th at 4:15, you'll also be giving a seminar in the Campus Center, which is also an awful lot of fun, all free and open to the public. And again, you can find out more information by going to albany.edu. Meanwhile, the new book is Women of Will: Following the Feminine in Shakespeare's Plays. It is published by Knopf and is a gorgeous volume, just a beautiful book.
It's beautiful.
It really is. Yeah. And you can also find out about the Shakespeare and Company season by going to shakespeare.org, shakespeare.org. Tina Packer, it's always a great pleasure to have you on the program. I wish you nothing but great success with the book and the future endeavors, and I thank you so much for sharing with us.
Thank you. Thank you.
A great pleasure. Again, you can find out more by going to albany.edu. Tina Packer at SUNY Albany Monday the 13th at 8 o'clock, giving the Burian Lecture, the new book, Women of Will. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.